Welcome to part two of this special CTQ Smartcast episode on future relevance. In part one, Ramanand and I spoke about what is future relevance, a future relevance manifesto, and how we practice it at CTQ. For this part, we had invited some questions from our friends, well-wishers, and customers. So we cover some concrete advice about content curation, learning, social media, and curiosity diet. So go on and listen as we reveal some trade secrets.
This is the CTQ Smartcast, where we have conversations about up-leveling, deliberate practice, and getting future relevant.
So going to the next point in our manifesto, staying valuable and up-leveling. Again, you know, anything specific that you can talk about, which we are doing at Choose to Think.
Right. So, you know, we realize that this is important, but not urgent, right? Even for us, even though we may profess about future relevance, we are humans. And so we, you know, there is always something pressing. There are other priorities. There is procrastination, all these things. So we developed this point of view that we should at least spend 15 minutes each day on future relevance in some form of the or the other. And often to do that, you offer a bouquet of, say, you know, double that amount of things to do that can keep you future relevant. So we started, for example, the reading compound about three, I think we are close to hitting 1400 days of reading one book summary every day. And most people, and a lot of people we know, don't like book summaries because they, you know, especially if they're readers, they find it too small, too, you know, just so you can't do justice to a book in a short summary. But I think I've realized that we use it very differently. We use it almost as a source of randomness. Because if I want to have a conversation with you about hybrid work today, tomorrow I might be having a conversation with someone else who's just picking my brains on, say, the onboarding question. How can I reimagine the whole world of onboarding? And he comes to me because I'm not an expert. If an expert would probably be so far deep down that rabbit hole that they would just give the same way. They would say, you need to have this sort of a party pack with your bottle and with your logo on it and a bunch of chocolates for the family. But this is really about transcending that. And so my taste should come from a book that I heard on design thinking. Your taste should come from a gift that someone in an automobile company gave to their suppliers. Right? And that's what we put together. So we've said that let's read one book summary every day. Sometimes we don't really like the book summary, but invariably we learn one new thing every day. And it's trivial, but it adds up, it compounds over a period of time. So reading compound is a small way to be future relevant every day. We spoke about Smartcast. Smartcast is, I think it's a hugely underrated way of becoming, you know, learning what is going to be valuable. Because one, you're talking to people who are ahead of you in the curve. Just perfectly fine. All of us cannot be early adopters, ahead of the curve in everything. You will see Choose to Think people ahead of the curve on something and laggards in others. I take myself for an example. I'm not a great technology device adopter. I'm usually way behind the curve. But I have the next best thing, which is access to people like you who might go and investigate a new device. Or we spoke recently to Max Haining, who is, teaching the world how to do 100 days of no code, because it looks like no code is going to be a big part of development. It's going to turn everyone into a developer. And so just the fact that we could approach him, he said, yes, we had a great conversation. We are so much better informed about no code. Is that it's a learning channel for us more than anything else. And so then we also have more sort of deliberate ways, like we have a weekly future fitness session. We talk about books that we read. We invite guests to come and tell us about things like reinforcement learning from the world of machine learning. And so this constant keeping aside that time, filling it with what potentially could be a source of value in the future. And then we do a lot of interesting experiments from time to time. So I think these are, you know, several examples of what we do without overwhelming our day-to-day.
Right. I think and what's been interesting about the future fitness session is, there have been practices like sharing learning in companies for a long time, right? And usually it starts off very nicely, and then it tapers off. And then that session is also, that slot is used for other things. I think a couple of things that we've done differently is, A, we've tried to protect that slot as much as possible, right? And B, we have kept it open, right? It's not just about we sharing something that we've learned. But yes, we know that there is that's an opportunity, that's a platform where we can share stuff that we are reading about, courses that we are doing. So it almost becomes like an output that you can aim for, that if I'm reading something, I know next month I can take a slot in the Future Fitness session, and I know that preparing a presentation will help me reinforce my learning as well, right? And then we've got people to come in, we have tried out different platforms, we've tried some of these apps, and we found out that together we can actually use this well. So we've adopted it into our way of work as well.
And I mean, in some sense, look at what it has turned you into, right? You are sort of the de facto tech implementer, though I come from a technology background. So you often take the lead in, say, developing or exploring an app, because it's, you've learned a little bit about no code and you can actually do it. And so I think you spoke very validly about things we've done to protect it. So I really do feel that for anyone who is trying to learn as a busy knowledge worker, they really need to have that slot and protect it like a lioness protects its cubs. So the Future Fitness session is something that we try and do that. I think we have a 95% uptime rate on Future Fitness sessions. Then you have to have that place where you can, you're encouraged to share your takeaways, you engage with the material that you're learning. So whether it is you doing a no-code exploration, whether it is someone taking a course, we have had colleagues who come and talk about writing related things that they have, their courses that they have taken, and they come and tell us about it. And so that act of generating that takeaway just helps you engage with that content so much more. And then also, because we spoke about that showcasing aspect, which is so important for that value creation, some of these also generate that initial draft of a video smartify. Yeah, boringly call artifact, but it is like a prototype of a smartcast. It is a prototype of a presentation, a thought leadership piece we want to talk about. Suddenly you realize that you have this. It's one of the biggest challenges anyone has been doing, working on their social capital, is what do I really say, or how do I say it in a very polished manner? And we know that getting to that polished manner requires you to go through that poor draft, right? That ugly draft, that is that pencil sketch you spoke about earlier. And so without knowing, after that 1 hour, you have this this ugly artifact waiting to become that swan that you can show to the world. So it has these multiple effects. I think just in the same way that a smartcast can be have multiple effects, they help us make sense of the world with each other. And they also have this great outcome that you can share with the world.
Right. Yeah. And what about, being deliberate about the culture, right?
We've had culture, but we've not been that deliberate about it. And let me explain how. So today, when we think about what are the components of a deliberate culture, one is that you need to have clearly identified or articulated your culture. Like our colleague Sirisha likes to say, culture is there whether you like it or not. Usually it is unsaid, it is practiced but not recognized. So why not articulate it? Why not define it? Why not capture it? And so we know that it's important to kind of capture these things down. It's important to collect those stories and not leave them for your 25th anniversary dinner. We've developed a culture over a period of time, which is about things like curiosity, things about sharing, things about experimentation, things about compounding. And so what we've started doing now, we are in fact in the middle of that exercise of deepening our cultural manifesto, as we call it. So the culture manifesto has things like, what is your vision? What are your values? We already had one sort of a draft version of it, But we're doing one more rigorous exercise around it to create that very deliberate aspect of defining the culture. We've also not been, you know, we've been guilty of not capturing our own stories as well. So hopefully, you know, viewers, listeners listening to this, you will see this very soon. So we're putting together, collecting our stories as well. But the fostering of culture through the kinds of things like we spoke about, through the reading compound, future fitness sessions, all that has been channels through which we have fostered internal culture and reinforced that kind of culture. So I think we are in the process of further deliberating and creating that deliberate culture. Because we are a small team, we have sometimes, it's been easy for us to just do it between people. But I think now we are taking a more deliberate approach around it.
Right. So Raman, let's move to the last section of this Smartcast, where, we'll come to some tactical advice around future relevance and stuff that people have asked us. A couple of questions came in through LinkedIn and other channels as well. So I will bring up those questions and let's take turns to answer. I'll add to, whatever you are saying as well. So one of the first questions that came up was, how do you pick up the next book and decide to listen to the next podcast?
Okay. So this is go back to our possibilities over predictions. Another variation of that is you don't need to be doing one thing at a time. You can be doing multiple things in parallel. So the question actually is, how do you just surround yourself with books and start keep picking them up, keep sampling them from different times? The mistake a lot of people do is that they say, okay, I have to pick one book, and that becomes a very important decision in their life at that point, right? So like the bookcase behind you, if you have an open bookcase with a glass window on it, then you can pick from different shelves at different points and you can stop them. So first is to reduce the size of that judgment. I think this is where that compounding approach, or seemingly make it a smaller decision than it needs to be. So in my case, speaking for myself, there are two, three things that will always come. One is that I've taught myself not to worry about the cost of a book. If I'm interested, even if it is a weak interest, and if it really truly is affordable, most of books are affordable if you are a working professional these days, is to just add it to your pile. And I'm not even using the word queue. I'm saying add it to your pile. Its day will come someday, but that decision of having added it to your pile will make that future day more likely to come. So I will pick it up from listening to recommendations of people. There is really no secret to it. The secret, if there is at all, is an open secret. It is about doing it. So I will get recommendations from fellow Choose to Think people. We record a monthly Insight Your Month, where we have to give one recommendation to our viewers. So then it makes us think of what I've read recently or what my colleague has read recently. Or we will ask our network and ask them to recommend it to us. So there is really no stronger recommendation engine than your network in my case.
Right. I think, just to make it more concrete and tangible, right? I think what we end up doing is, A, we always keep our antennae up, right? Correct. Wherever there is a mention of a book or an author or an article, just go check it out, right? A lot of times what I've seen people is they postpone it for a later time. They'll say, okay, I'll check it out. And, we know human memory is the most fallible thing in the world. So you are going to forget about it. So one thing is go check it out, make notes. I think that is one thing which, I've done. I use a very archaic way of doing this where, if I'm carrying my phone somewhere, I'll actually send an email to myself. So, most mails from Harish to Harish are these kind of things, right? Because I want to, check out the next day morning when I have the time to actually do this. So I don't miss it. That's one thing. And show notes of podcasts, articles, references. And one thing that I've been doing, which, which may put some of our Smartcast guests, make them feel uneasy, is, you know, a lot of people have bookcases like this. So, you know, when I'm asking questions and they're in full flow, I'm just trying to look at, you know, what are the books that they have in their bookcases, right? Because again, that's a great way to look at it. What I, you know, sort of use this for as a reference point, you know, how I started this, is one tip that you had given me back when we used to go to British Library, right? The first place that you would look at for books were books that were being returned. So they had a space where you all the people returning books, they would be kept for some time before the person would actually go back and you know, place them in the shelves. Because those books are the ones which are being read. There's something good about those books, which is why they've been, you know, rented and they're being read. So the chances of you finding a good book is higher there in that slot. So similarly, look at, you know, the bookshelves of people. So yeah, next time any guest comes, make sure that I can read those books.
I just wanted to add a couple of things. I realized that I was giving a more systemic answer. One is that it's like the equivalent of bookmarking, right? So I will use my Amazon wish list to just add. So it is that that even more lower cost commitment, right? Yeah. You don't even have to purchase the book. All you're telling yourself is that I think I'm interested in this book. Currently I think that. So I do use my Amazon wish list. That's my default destination because practically every book can be found on Amazon. And if it's not on Amazon, I'm going to struggle to get it anyway. So, you know, use your wish list, use some kind of a bookmarking service. It could be that. It could also be, if you see a book at someone else's place, take a photograph of it, create a channel for yourself, which is like a group on WhatsApp, Telegram, Signal, whatever it is, where you're the only member and you can keep sending yourself notes just like you send emails to yourself.
Right. Another thing, useful thing is to take, I mean, if you're on Kindle, get samples.
Absolutely.
It's the next step to adding to your wish list, right? So yeah, next question. Most people read books or listen to podcasts, but they're not efficiently able to implement the things that they learn. What is your process for reading or listening to podcasts and a few tips that you can share with others?
So again, first I want to start with a sort of a reassuring aspect to this. One is that if you are seeing this, viewing this, you are a human. Your brain is designed to forget unless the information is considered very important to your brain. And most times we will forget. So you are not alone if you think you cannot retain information. But you know, science also tells us that you have to take additional steps if you want to retain information. So that is where you need to focus on. And then the implementation can follow. So what I've started doing, once I recognize this and I kind of analyzed when I remember and when I don't remember, is that I do take notes as much as possible. I've started scribbling in paper books, which I would not do earlier. I take Kindle highlights very liberally. I don't try and think whether this is really a highlight or not. It sounds interesting. I can discover a use for this. I can post it on social media. I want to refer to it. I just go ahead and highlight. Sometimes when I use an application like on my phone, the Kindle app and not the Kindle itself, I will use different colors to mark different sorts of outcomes. So I think just go ahead and liberally take notes, capture it in the moment, and then the next stage is of the retention system. So like we said, you know, go to a future fitness like session. If you want to come and use a future fitness session to talk about something you are exploring, that's your output channel. Get in touch with us. So all these different output channels, like inside your month, our daily, you know, I read, I post a takeaway, they all become reasons to engage with the content, post that retention. And then we've also had this approach. It's almost like Readwise, that tool, right? Which you can use that to resurface information back to you. We have something similar internally that we do on our internal reading compound. So that's the next trigger. And just create that retention, because you know you're not going to retain everything at first glance. What do you do, Anish?
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing I would say in, you know, sort of solving this problem, right? First is acknowledging that you're going to forget about it. right? That memory decay is going to happen. You are not going to remember something forever. So then what do you do about it? Being very deliberate about these outputs, right? Having some destination where you can talk about it, post about it, helps a lot. And if I would say all the things that I've read and listened to or watched, where I did not have an output of it, have more or less disappeared from my memory. There may be some knowledge that I would have gained out of it, which will build, compound unconsciously. But if you ask me what is it that was there in that book, I'll struggle to tell you. But the ones where I have, you know, done something, yes, I will remember that.
I just wanted to add a little bit of nuance, just building on what you said, which is that we also don't want to give you the impression that most reading is therefore useless or most consumption of information is useless. There are other psychological effects, like once you encounter something, you will start paying more attention selectively to it frequently. So that your environment will provide those kinds of triggers. So do consume. And I think, Tyler Cowen, the economist and podcaster, has said this, that to read a book, actually, I need to spend 57 years of my life. That's the time it takes to read the book. Because what he's saying is that all the accumulated wisdom you have so far will actually help you read faster, better, smarter the next time. So it's like compounding all over again. You start very slow, you trudge very slowly, but then you suddenly find out that your speed of consumption, your speed of accumulation, all does improve. The final thing I think I will mention here is that try a spaced repetition tool. I use Anki. I've started experimenting with it. I'm still a novice on it. But there are some people I'll mention. There's a person called Michael Nielsen who's spoken about how he has used Anki to learn or consume scientific papers. I think he's a physicist. And so he needs to remember and revisit a lot of papers. So he's even turned that into a spaced repetition form. So I think recognize the fact that you will forget. Also recognize there are conditions under which you will remember, and try to use tools to maximize that.
Right. Yeah. And one other thing that I would like to add here, a lot of people have been talking about it lately, is not having this guilt of leaving books halfway through or whatever. I think that sounds counterintuitive, right? That you're saying that you should read more and you can also leave books halfway through. I think just being open to it makes you free. Suddenly when you know that you have that choice, and I think this is where that whole idea also comes in, where you are using what you have learned earlier. You know what is being talked about in that chapter sometime, and it's not like that chapter, there's no use of that chapter. Somebody who's encountering that topic for the first time needs that building block, but you don't go and start reading the alphabet today, right? You assume that you know the alphabet and you actually start reading the words. But for a child, they have to start from the alphabet and then they proceed to words and sentences. So if you are at a higher level, go ahead, make use of that advantage you have of being ahead in the curve, right? So I think that is again very important, both with podcasts and books. So be more liberal, be ready to sample more things and leave things if they're not working, right? Next question that has come in is, how do you explore content and people on social media? So I'll go first here.
Yeah, I think I wanted you to go first because you've been doing a better job of it than me. So go ahead.
Yeah, so one thing that I've learned recently is using a lot of these lists and keyword searches, right, on platforms like Twitter and LinkedIn, where these hashtags, again, whenever somebody uses hashtags, I have a look at it at least. I have certain lists on my TweetDeck interface for people who talk about some aspect of HR, remote work, and things like that. I have a separate list for cricket, which is the one thing that I don't like to mix with work. And that's my guilty pleasure. But yeah, that has to be there, right? So using these lists and keywords, I think, is very important. The minute you get some of these keywords, try to also look at other keywords that are being used in that tweet or in that post, because you know, they will help, right, in discoverability. So one thing is to look at people who have written an article, you know, who are featured on a podcast. So go follow them if they're talking about stuff that is of interest. That's like the direct way of doing things. The other thing that I immediately do is look at people that they are following, right? And may not you may not want to look at the entire list, but quickly look at, say, 50, 100 people, see if you can, you know, sample a few, look at them. Just do that because it will add variety to your sources of, you know, content that you are consuming. You need to keep adding that, because otherwise you're going to get, you know, the echo chamber is just waiting to happen. In some cases, I deliberately go seek out people that I absolutely, you know, don't like, or, you know, their views don't match mine. I seek them out. There are some publications that I have a paid subscription to, simply because I want to keep that. I want to tell myself that, yes, I paid for this publication, so I need to go check out what, you know, they're publishing, because I want to build that, you know, multifaceted view. And it's not that, you know, I may dislike the general trend or slant of that publication or that site, but there are a lot of things for which it is, the jury is out, right? You don't know whether it's a fact or an opinion. So the more opinions you, you know, collect, the better your worldview is going to be. So that's one thing. And the other one is to subscribe to as many newsletters as possible. And this is where I think I've done something which is very interesting, and I feel very happy about this hack that I came up with. I subscribe to a bunch of newsletters. A lot of them give very good recommendations. I find out about new people to follow, and, you know, sites and all of that. But like with anything, you know, it is glut of content, right? My CTQ mailbox was full, then my Gmail inbox was full, and then suddenly one idea struck me. So I created a new you know, Gmail ID, free one, and now I use that for all my Substack subscriptions and all my paid subscriptions. All of that goes into that one inbox, so nothing else goes in. It is content that I know I'm interested in reading, right? So now I don't have the guilt during the week or any given day that, oh, this newsletter has come in and I have not read it. But when I have time, I know that I just need to go into that inbox, and when I go there, that's the dedicated time and space to consume all this, you know, great content that I know is out there and you know, going to make my world a better one.
Correct. So I think it is again back to that system approach. One thing I think we all had to unlearn was going from a world where knowledge was scarce to where knowledge is now abundant, and there is the host pipe only becomes bigger and bigger each day. And so I remember being in a mode where, you know, whoever I follow on Twitter, I really want to read as many of their tweets that they have posted in the last 24 hours, and they're thus not really adding more people to my feeds and trying all sorts of ways. So now I think it's the other. You have to really think in an abundance first mode, where it's going to be sampling, it's going to be taking bets on sources, and not really worrying too much about getting that decision right. You can always unfollow people, as you know, Naveen Kabra, one of our Smartcast guests, has told us. You can always, so you should be quick to follow people, and you should be equally to you know, quick to unfollow them if needed. Similarly, I think with the newspaper newsletter subscriptions, I've taken a leaf from your book and set up that separate account. Two things I'll talk about. One more thing is that I wish Twitter had better lists management, because it really is a game changer, according to me. So a very simple way to do it, if you identify five topics in your what we call the curiosity diet. In my case, I want to know things about learning. I want to know things about the future of work. I'll create lists for them. And so then you can actually, instead of going to Twitter, you are going to your future of work list. And right, that, I think, is a huge game changer for a lot of people. One thing I've done deliberately, which seems old-fashioned, is to actually increase my newspaper count. I've actually subscribed to one more newspaper these days. Because I, you know, the conventional wisdom these days is that don't subscribe to news because news keeps you unhappy. You know, there's always this front page sadness and it's always going stale and all that. I, in fact, found it the other way because news now breaks like every second. The newspaper is actually the resource of slow news now. So by the time I see my news the next day, a lot of it has gone stale already, which actually makes it easier to jump to those few things which are genuinely interesting or they are more analytical, opinion-oriented pieces. So I think the newspapers still do a very good job. They also have the advantage of not distracting you by having pop-up, you know,
ads.
Ads and clicks and, you know, new tabs to open. I cannot, as much as I try, open a new tab to explore one new thing. I'm just stuck with a piece of paper. And so I find it a lot easier. It helps with my digital you know, consumption and so on. So paradoxically, I've actually added a newspaper and I find that is a really good source of content. It still is true. And I must confess that Ashish Chandorkar, someone that we interviewed as for one of the smartcasts, he had indicated his about, he talked about his newspaper reading. Again, I took a leaf from his book to do that, or his newspaper to do that.
I've also done the same. In fact, that has also given me some other subscriptions, which I've been happy about.
Yeah, and they, I mean, they actually do feature people on social media. So if you're looking for people to follow on social media, your newspaper can actually help recommend a few names as well.
Right. Yeah. All right. Let's move to the next question. How do we identify problems at CTQ? And some tips on how others can do the same at their companies or organizations.
So I think we spoke about the importance of reflection earlier. Reflection is great. Everyone should do it. You've been always told, you know, try and journal every day or try and, you know, do a retrospective. So people do these, but it's also about the frequency and the deliberateness with which you do some of these things. For reflection, you don't need to go into an offsite, into a fancy hotel and get people together. Can you really make reflection a compounding habit? I think that is the problem. It's sort of a meta way to identify problems. So I think we've been very deliberate about reflection. We do that as part of small debriefs after events, after activities that we do. But we were discussing yesterday that we're still not happy with it. We still want to take it further. So I think really setting aside time for reflection is a huge starting point. And we would recommend everyone here to do it. It's hard to add a new habit, a new routine, a new ritual for your team and for yourselves, but it is really worth that effort. I will also add that there are techniques like, say, pre-mortems that can help you do proactive reflection, if I can call it that. So practices like that, really learning from the mistakes of other people and not going there is how you can identify problems. And the third thing I would say is that we do try and capture everything in our internal source of knowledge called Asana. So if there is something we want to act on, a problem, it is like that bookmark that we said for books. It's there are different places for different things. So even problems, best to put it down somewhere, best to kind of put it in an Asana task, best to send an email to yourself. So just capturing that problem when you encounter it, having that antennae open. So I think we're just repeating ourselves now. It's that antennae, it is that capture, and then it is that system to go back to it.
Right. I think you mentioned Asana and you know, reflection about events and debriefs. I think one thing to reiterate there is the fact that we have reflected on everything. So it's like a matter of process, right? You go and, you know, deliver a session. It could be a workshop. The end of the workshop, because Asana is the virtual home of all things CTQ, that's where you know, you don't just go and close a task. You say that this is what happened at the you know, in the workshop. Anyone else wants to add something is you know, who has also attended that, or through the course of that task or that mini project or project, leaves their comments there. So now next time when you encounter such a situation, you will go and check there, right? And that is there. I think the biggest challenge is people not capturing it there. So just, you know, thinking of that, the life of that task or that event does not end when the event has been delivered or that project has been delivered. But it just add that extra 5 minutes or 10 minutes and assume the closure on Asana as the actual closure of that project. I think being very deliberate about that has ensured that we capture all these, and that's where I think we've like identified these problems for ourselves and what are the things that we want to work on.
I would also say that people these days talk about learning to learn, right? But they don't think of these small so-called trivial activities as learning to learn. So any activity, even a smartcast like this, there will be something that we sort of learned. And if we can enable that space and that that method to just put it down somewhere, the choice of going back to it and looking at it and learning from it and refreshing your memory is a separate one. But that can only be enabled if you get the first step right. So I think when you are encountering problems, you want to capture it. And when you hear other people, fortunately, again, we speak to a lot of very diverse people and they tell us about problems that they are facing. And that in many cases is a problem that we are likely to face someday in the future. So, just that reflection, that documentation process is a great starting point.
Yeah. And I think one more thing that we've been trying to do is writing down those decision journals, right? When we talk about working with some agency or hiring someone, we say that these are the reasons why we are going ahead with this. These are the conditions that we expect. So next time, when the outcome of that decision comes to the fore, you can actually then evaluate that, okay, this is what you expected and this is what has happened. So just being more objective about these kind of things helps. And that's how you become a better decision maker as well. So I think that is also something which we started doing. We have a folder on our Google Drive called Decision Journals now. All right, last question. And this one is from one of our well-wishers and friends of CTQ, Ashwin Bhandarkar. He says, can you talk about a conscious practice of knowledge management? Any tools and methods you use? We've covered some of these things over the last few questions, but if you want to address this question specifically.
Yeah. So I'll talk about two things. One is just recap some of the concepts and the tools that are very useful. And the second is to give some specific, if you look at my phone or my devices, what will you see installed on it that enables something like this. So some of the concepts, spaced repetition is a tool that is or a concept that is really very handy. Recognizing that certain types of knowledge, they need to have that emotional connect with what you already know. And so some of that is going to stick better if it is a story or if it is, I can find a connection to it that I am interested in. So for example, if I find a sporting connection to it or I find a computer science connection to a concept, I'm probably more likely to add it to my set of knowledge. So that's something I try and do very deliberately. I also take occasional courses. I'm, again, not very hesitant in trying out courses. So just to give you an example, this year I completed a set of courses on futures thinking. So this involves activities like scenario planning and so on. But I'm also taking a course on appreciating Carnatic music because there are multiple things you can learn. One is the actual subject matter, which I have a passing interest in, but also how that teacher teaches, what is the system that they use to deliver these courses. Everyone has their own different approach to it. So if you look at the kinds of apps that I use to enable my conscious knowledge management, there is Asana that I take notes in. For links, because I do a lot of curation at work, I use a combination of Pocket, which is a great app for capturing links. I also have an extension on my Chrome browser. It's called OneTab. And so you open tabs and it just suddenly adds up, right? And God forbid there crashes and takes everything with it. So I use one tab. It just creates a single tab with a list of links in place. It's a very one-click action. So very simple to use. I use Notion for monthly reflection. I have a list of things that I want to reflect about. And that a lot of these pieces of what I learned that month can all come in there. I also use an old-fashioned diary for a journaling habit that I'm now proud to say I've been able to hold up for 4 months straight. So that again, I capture small things like what did I learn today or what is on my mind that I want to get off my mind. So things like that. An old-fashioned notebook is also good. Kindle highlights. Kindle is a big part of my book reading. So Kindle highlights, and the Kindle app has a lot of features, like you can export that and so on. I also wanted to mention Duolingo. I do 15 minutes of learning French and Spanish. And so Duolingo is my place for learning languages. So there is Blinkist, our book summary app. The other thing I've done, therefore, now you're wondering, all these different apps, right? To kind of just put them together. They're all physically co-located on the icons are together on the phone screen. And finally, I think getting familiar with online learning platforms, whether it is Coursera, whether it is edX, whether it is 42 Courses, another very quirky platform. Everybody offers things in a different way. Get familiar with them, browse them, go through them, and suddenly you will then discover courses that can help you stay future relevant. What about you, Harish?
Yeah. So some of the things are very similar. By the way, I've also done one, I think, Harvard course on Handel. Handel's okay. is it Handel?
George Handel. Yeah.
So that was interesting. Again, it was just about going and exploring something which was not part of my regular learning universe, right? So otherwise, the tools are very standard in the sense that things that you've spoken about, the notes. Journaling has been something which I've been doing for, I think, the last 2-3 years now. Been fairly regular about it. It sort of I summarize my day, things that I did, things I felt happy about, things, ways in which I could have had a better day. All these things help. It brings a closure to my day, because I usually do it just before sleeping, using Asana for choose to think related work, and also personal reminders, right? Things that I want to go and explore. The separate inbox that we spoke about for subscriptions. And some things that I've done, like these experiments, I created this personal CRM tool using Airtable. Tried to hit two birds with one stone, not really kill, but do experimentation with a new no-code tool like Airtable, and also create something. It is a project for my own use, right? Which is where I try to tag people with, different topics that they will be interested in. So, since it's a question for Ashwin, Ashwin's tags are like, music and, cryptic crosswords in my Airtable database, right? So these are the kind of things that help in just putting that whole thing together, all the personal knowledge that we are talking about, whether it's, people, ideas, concepts, stuff that we know about people. I also use Notion for both making a track of, keeping track of, people that I want to interview for, CTQ Smartcast. I have a separate podcast as well, where I interview my friends from my B school, just to get a sense of where they are in their career and what they've learned over the last, 2 decades. We actually have a monthly self feedback document that we follow at Choose to Think. So I made it a point to make it a weekly reflection. So every Thursday I fill that out. treating these future fitness sessions as destinations where I can talk about whatever I'm learning and reading ensures that I have that discipline of capturing my notes. And these are the kind of things that have helped me, very concrete things that somebody can pick up and use in, the, in their own life.
I also, since we have to thank Ashwin for this question, I must also say that people like Ashwin and many of our Compound subscribers, they are another reason for us to consciously practice knowledge management. So everyone who's on our multiple Compound groups, the Daily Reader, the Future Stack, Social Capital, there is always something that they share with us in the course of them going about their compounding habits. That is a great way for us to also share information with them. So while this might not be a conscious practice, it is that opportunistic practice of knowledge management. So someone like Ashwin says something, I can add something to that conversation, and which I would have got from some recent reading of mine. So for instance, yesterday some of our groups were talking, had read an article about design and what it tells you about designing for people who are not in the mainstream thinking of design. So this could be, for instance, older people. And since all of us are going to be old at some point or other, this is actually something we should care about. And we had such a wonderful set of comments by different subscribers. One of them is actually a designer. He's been a trained designer. And so someone else mentioned about how if you design for so-called disabled people, is actually useful for everyone else. And someone like Rory Sutherland, who's an ad guru and talks about behavioral economics, has also said this, that if you design a ramp, you can actually, it's good for everyone. It doesn't have to be only for old people or wheelchair users. So something like this I can share with my team, and with all the Compound subscribers that we have. And so you are also, Ashwin, a source for us to practice our knowledge management.
Right. Yeah. And on that note, Raman, we'll bring this to an end. But before that, I want to ask you for future relevance of X, as we ask all our guests. But I'm going to ask you for, say, three concrete steps that, we can recommend to leaders or up-levelers on what they should do for future relevance.
Yeah. So I think, you have said this before, that we need to keep reminding ourselves and everyone that what we did 12 months ago shouldn't be what we are doing at this point in time. So making oneself obsolete is really, or disrupting oneself is the name of the game here. And to that, I think we have three things to offer, which is more timeless in nature. You can implement this, but still stay relevant in the future. So the first thing for leaders of teams or anyone just taking charge of their own future relevance is come up with a manifesto for yourselves. If you're trying to build culture in your teams, come up with a culture manifesto. Tells you what your values are, what your mission is, what your goals are, where are you headed. And there are some interesting techniques and templates to do that. At an individual level, there are a lot of reflection questionnaires that you can do. But essentially, it's hard work for a lot of us. But try and put down in writing as to where, what are the scenarios that are ideal scenarios for you. And then working backwards, what do you do to get to those scenarios? I think it is not so much about just saying that this is what I want to have, so much money in the bank or whatever. Just really to think of these different scenarios and pick what you want. So that manifesto can really help. And the culture manifesto, we have an entire process around that now. So we know it's hard work, but we know it is worth doing. The second one is, for yourselves, to keep yourselves relevant, pick up a compounding habit. And now a compounding habit could be reading every day. It could be journaling every day. It could be expressing yourselves on social media every day. And there are many other, some people, for them, engaging with the arts or engaging with a hobby every day could be a compounding habit.
Experimenting
is a compounding habit. So, when you do compounding habits, you want to do it frequently. You want to do it for a long period of time. And you also want to capture some of these little artifacts and takeaways and then use that to get better over time. So build one for yourselves, audit your habits, see which of them is a simple habit, which is a compounding habit, and which are habits that you need to get rid of. And the third one is to, we consume a lot of information these days. We spoke about the culture manifesto. So you know where you're headed. You know, and now you're building these little compounding habits that take you step by step. But we also think you should identify a diet, a new kind of diet. We call it, you can call it a culture diet. We can also call it a curiosity diet. Think of those areas that you want to deliberately invest your time in, learning about it, consuming information. This could be with you yourself, it could be with your team. So if you want to foster a certain sense of shared culture in your team, whether the team is co-located or whether it is distributed, really doesn't matter. Create use a culture diet where you are, let's say your one of your values is openness, or one of your values is resourcefulness, one of your values is curiosity. Saying that is not good enough. Can you share information how someone is curious? Can you point out a leader that practices curiosity work and share that information? Can you ask your team members to just tell us how they were resourceful in the last 6 months? Create that space for informal conversation, but around some of these topics, which we call a culture diet. It is like, you cannot force this down their throat, but you're offering that plate to them.
Right. On that note, Raman, I think we've given these three very concrete recommendations. Make a culture manifesto, start a compounding habit for yourself, ensure a culture diet for your team. I think, most leaders and up-levelers will do well if they start doing this. So on that note, thanks a lot for, spending this time and sharing what we have been doing, revealing some of our secrets and in the process, we having fun and recounting some of our, history as well. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Harish.
If you like this, we know you care about your and your team's future relevance. You can find us and click on the subscribe button on YouTube, Spotify, Google and Apple Podcasts. You can also find us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook and Instagram. There are two ways to enter the insider group of friends of CTQ. A Telegram channel where you'll get daily tidbits that help you think about future relevance, and our weekly email newsletter called The Upleveler. We've got some fabulous testimonials from our subscribers. We share special discount codes for CTQ compounds and exclusive invitations to our events on both these channels. Just go to choosetothink.com, that is think with a Q, and you'll find all the links to subscribe. You owe it to yourself.